Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada. When he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees, I bestow my special mercy upon him. Please repeat after me. When he becomes frustrated in his attempts,
when he becomes frustrated in his attempts
to make money and instead befriends
my devotees,
I bestow my special mercy upon him. So this doesn't have a purport, I'll read further on. Text number 10. Tad Brahma Paramam Shukshmam Chinmatram Sad Anantakam Vigyayat Mataya Dhiraha Samsarat Parimuchyate. A person who has thus become sober fully realizes the Absolute as the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of Spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the Supreme Truth is the foundation of his own existence, he is freed from the cycle of material life. Text 11. Because I am difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities, who are quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulences from these deities, they become arrogant, intoxicated with pride and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. Text 12. Shukdev Goswami said, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva and others are able to curse or bless one. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quick to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear King, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. Text 13. In this connection, an ancient historical account is related concerning how the Lord of Kailash Mountain was put into danger by offering a choice of benedictions to the demon Vrika. Text 14. The demon named Vrika, a son of Shakunis, once met Narad on the road. The wicked fellow asked him which of the three chief gods could be pleased most quickly. Narad told him, worship Lord Shiva and you will soon achieve success. He quickly becomes pleased by seeing his worshipper's slightest good qualities, and quickly angered by seeing his slightest fault. Text 16. He became pleased with ten-headed Ravana and also with Bana when they each chanted his glories like bards in a royal court. Lord Shiva then bestowed unprecedented power upon each of them, but in both cases he was consequently beset with great difficulty. Purport. Ravana worshipped Lord Shiva to gain power and then misused that power to uproot the Lord's residence, sacred Kailash Parvat. On Banasura's request, Lord Shiva agreed to personally guard Bana's capital. And later he had to fight for Bana against Shri Krishna and his sons. Om Agyana Adhimirandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, it's a very interesting chapter, this one. All the chapters of Bhagavatam are very interesting. But this one we see a chapter named Lord Shiva Saved from Vrikasura. And till text number 8, there was a question asked to Shukdev Goswami by Parikshit Maharaj. He asked him this question, that how come that people who worship demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, or specifically Lord Shiva, they are very materially opulent. When Lord Shiva himself is a renunciate, he's living under different trees every other night, and his body is covered by ashes, and he doesn't dress very opulently. And how come his followers have so much material wealth and opulence, whereas Lord Vishnu, who is so opulent, he possesses the six opulences in full, and his followers or worshippers are poverty stricken. So sometimes we also see many people, they are afraid to worship Krishna or Vishnu, because another name of Krishna is Hari, who takes away things. So they are afraid that Krishna or Vishnu might take away their material opulences. So this question is asked quite a lot, and here Shukdev Goswami, he answers this. And in the previous verses we see, like especially text number 8, and if we read the Prabhupada Lilamrita, Prabhupada quotes this text a lot. It goes like this: Yasyaham anu grinami harishye tad dhanam shanai tato dhanam tyajanti asya svajana dukha dukhidam. The personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So we can see this verse like especially exemplifies Srila Prabhupada's life. Prabhupada met his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in 1922 in Calcutta. So one of Prabhupada's friends, he forced him to meet the sadhu. And Prabhupada said he's already met so many sadhus, and he wasn't very convinced with them. Actually, it's the Vedic culture to invite sadhus to a house. So Prabhupada's father, Gaur Mohan Dey, he would invite so many sadhus, and Prabhupada would serve them and see them, but he wasn't very satisfied with most of them. Because in the age of Kali, generally we see sannyas is forbidden because people take advantage of it for the facilities. So then Prabhupada's friend, he asked him to come and see this sadhu who had come to Calcutta. So they went there, and when Prabhupada saw him, Prabhupada was convinced that he's a true Vaishnava, or follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he asked him to spread Krishna consciousness in the West. And Prabhupada took that order very seriously from the very first time he met him. And then Prabhupada made this his spiritual master's order, his life and soul. But Prabhupada had a plan to execute it. Prabhupada's plan was that first he will accumulate wealth, because Prabhupada was a businessman and he was a very successful businessman. I think even the astrologers predicted that he would be one of India's richest men, very successful in business. So Prabhupada thought, I'll be successful in business, and with this money I will print books and establish Krishna consciousness in India and then in the rest of the world. Because to establish like Krishna consciousness, if you don't have an organization, it is very difficult to preach, isn't it? Like this, for example, if you want to preach Krishna consciousness on our own without the infrastructure of ISKCON, it is not very easy, because people won't recognize us, or we won't have the proper facilities in the association of devotees. But so Prabhupada wanted to take that step, and so there was the Gaudiya Math was there, so the whole infrastructure was already set up by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he wanted to preach like that, but Krishna had other plans for him. And we see in Prabhupada's life that he was gradually deprived of all his wealth. He tried to establish so many businesses. Like he went to Allahabad, he opened his pharmacy, was working for a while, but then that failed. Then Prabhupada, I think, he joined the sales team of some company in Bombay, and also, you know, then they accused Prabhupada that, they accused him that, you know, he's promoting his own business, not the company's business, because he had his own business also simultaneously. So then Prabhupada lost that. And also we see in Prabhupada's life story how his family was giving him up gradually, or especially his wife. She wasn't very much interested in his preaching activities. She wasn't supporting him too much. And it says in the Lilamrita how when Prabhupada would be giving discourses on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam in his house, she and her sons, they would be drinking tea, you know, like, and in a separate room. And they would purposefully not go and attend his sessions. So in this way, we see how, and then whenever Prabhupada's business would fail, Prabhupada would remember this verse and he would laugh. He would say how, you know, Krishna is depriving him of his wealth and his relatives. And his relatives were rejecting him. Because then Prabhupada became initiated by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he took this preaching very seriously, though he was a householder. And he was traveling here and there, conducting his business and simultaneously trying to preach. And Prabhupada was suffering so many distresses, one after another. No, it is not that if like one becomes a devotee, distresses don't come. But we see like in Prabhupada's lifetime, there were so many obstacles in his preaching of Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada, he made his spiritual master's order his life and soul. And we see like Prabhupada, you know, till he took sannyas, he had to struggle so much, even to print his books. He didn't have any money. So, like, he would be dependent on whoever would give him a donation. And he was writing his Back to Godhead magazine simultaneously. And then Prabhupada saw that how all his attempts were being frustrated. Like, then he thought, I will preach to the Westerners. I will go to the West and preach. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also came in his dreams. He asked him to take sannyas so that he can preach more freely. And Prabhupada did that, and gradually he wrote the first three volumes of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he prepared them. Then somehow or other, Krishna arranged for him to go to New York. He arranged his passport, visa, P-form, and Sumati Murariji, she arranged a ticket for him on a steamship. So we see like this, Prabhupada faced so many difficulties. And actually distresses, they also come to devotees. But in the case of a pure devotee, all the distresses are sent by Krishna. Whereas for ordinary people, it is their karma. Whatever actions they have done previously, they get a reaction for that. So sometimes people, you know, when they see devotees, they cannot tell the difference. Because a devotee's activities, they just look to be the same as a materialist activities. Like a devotee goes to work, you know, devotee has a family. And devotee also sometimes get fired from work. Haven't met many yet, but sometimes, yeah. Like in Prabhupada's case, you know, he lost. But these distresses are actually sent by Krishna for the purification of the devotee, so that the devotee can remember Krishna more. Just like we also see, for example, when the gopis were feeling separation from Krishna, and Krishna did that so that their love can increase for him. Because when they are in separation, then they remember Krishna even more. So we see that in Prabhupada's lifetime also. And also like in these texts we see how generally people they worship demigods to attain material benedictions. Like especially in India. Like if you go to India, I think majority of India worships Kali, or Krishna worshippers are quite less as compared, you know. If you like Ganesh worshippers, Hanuman worshippers, worshippers of demigods is very prominent. A demigod can also mean a very affluent or a very powerful man. So generally a demigod is a living entity which is empowered by Krishna to perform a specific task. So, but whereas in the West, people worship leaders or very powerful men. And one worships demigods so that one can satisfy his material desires very quickly. But this is not considered to be very intelligent, because such desires are temporary. Even the results are temporary. And the demigods themselves are temporary. So an intelligent person, he will not worship any powerful living entity. Or he will not worship the demigods. One who is intelligent, he wants something permanent happiness. But with the demigods, they are obliged to give us the how do you say it? They are obliged to give us the results if we can pay the price. You know, just like for example, we go to a supermarket. You know, just some people they don't like Hare Krishnas, but because we have the money and we can purchase the product, so they have to sell it to us. Or, for example, you know, I used to work in a 7-Eleven when I was in uni. So I knew smoking was bad for health, you know. And sometimes I thought I should maybe tell these people, you know, they're smoking so many cigarettes. People are coming for Peter Jackson's, Peter Stav, so many. Give me this, give me that. But I can't tell them anything because they have the money. And they have the power to buy it. So they put $20 on the table and I have to give it to them. So in this way, demigods are obliged. They are not independent of Krishna. Whereas Krishna is fully independent. So if one can pay the price, then the demigods have to come. It is not like, you know, sometimes we think, you know, we can discriminate, you know, what is good for somebody, what is not good for someone. How come the demigods can't discriminate? Just like with Lord Shiva. Vrikasura did so much austerity. And then Lord Shiva came and gave him this boon. He asked him for this boon that whosoever head I touch, he'll be destroyed. So, you know, one might think Lord Shiva doesn't have even this much intelligence. But because all the demigods, they are obliged by this system. That if one can pay the price, they have to fulfill the result. Whereas with Krishna, it's not like that. Krishna sees what is good for us, and he is fully independent. So, you know, sometimes, you know, like devotees have a lot of desire to have material wealth or other opulences. Krishna will fulfill it in such a way that we lose the attraction for it. Example is, for example, Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom greater than his father's, or even greater than Lord Brahma's. And for this reason, he performed so much austerity. His mother told him, if you want a kingdom greater than your father's, you should worship Lord Narayan. And he will be found in the forest. That's where all the great sages go to worship him. So he went there, performed severe tapasya. Actually, the whole universe was shaking. He did so much austerity. And then Lord Vishnu came in front of him. And when he saw Krishna or Vishnu, he said, you know, I was hankering for broken pieces of glass. But now that I've seen you, I don't want anything else. At the same time, Krishna fulfilled his desire. He gave him the planet Dhruva Loka, which doesn't get destroyed when this particular universe gets destroyed, or when there's the partial destruction or the full destruction. Whereas Dhruva Maharaj's planet still stays there. So his desire also got fulfilled, but at the same time he lost his desire for wealth, because he got Krishna, he got something more. So like that, you know, we can even see in our own lives, you know, generally when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have a lot of, you know, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when one comes to him, generally one has motivations. One is in search of wealth, one is in distress, one is inquisitive, and one is in search for God or knowledge of him. But when we perform devotional service, by the process of devotional service, especially by the process of chanting Hare Krishna, we get purified gradually over a period of time. And it depends on us to the extent we apply the process, to the extent we get purified. Krishna says, Ye yatha mam prapadyante, tam sataiva bhajami aham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. So according to our degree of devotional service, we get purified. We have so many motivations. You know, we want this or we want that. We want fame. But by the process of devotional service, gradually we lose our attraction towards these things. Krishna gives it to us. Just like, for example, when I was very new, I'm still very new. Yeah. You know, like when I was coming up in, I was taking to Krishna consciousness, I had this desire to have a car. Because before I used to drive other people's cars, I had desire to have my own car. So, and Krishna gave it to me. And Kripa Sindhu Prabhu can remember, I used to open the bonnet every week and fixing something. But then gradually, I lost the desire for it. I wasn't too attracted. Krishna did give it, but you know, then I lost the desire for it. So in this way we can see that Krishna actually purifies our desires. It's not that our desires get annihilated, as the Buddhists or the Mayavadis say. Actually, the process of Krishna consciousness is to purify our desires. You know, to not have desires, that means we are dead. We are a dead stone. If one is alive, one has to have desires. So the process of Krishna consciousness is to purify them. And also we see, like, in this pastime, the process of Krishna consciousness depends upon our sincerity. And a very nice story in this regard is like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when Haridas Thakur, how it shows that Krishna wants all living entities to actually come back to him. And this is exemplified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see, like, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was having conversations with Haridas Thakur. He said, I'm unhappy for one thing. He said, I'm unhappy to see other living entities suffering in this world. How will they be delivered? He asked Haridas Thakur this question. And actually we see this is the mood of our whole parampara, is this preaching mood. And even in Srila Prabhupada's life, we see how much Srila Prabhupada would strive to give Krishna consciousness to others. And once Srila Prabhupada was in London airport, and people were, you know, especially if you go to an airport, you see people are running away, running here and there, catching this flight, that flight, in a hurry. And tears were coming from Prabhupada's eyes to see the condition of them. So it was in the same mood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked Haridas Thakur, how will all the living entities be delivered? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, by the chanting of your holy names, all living entities will be delivered. Even if they chant the holy names unconsciously, or even if the grammar is not correct, or it is improperly chanted. But such chanting has to be done in Namabhasa stage, or offenseless chanting. Then such chanting has an immediate effect. And even Haridas Thakur, he gave the example of, if somebody is even being killed by a boar, and he's chanting haram, haram. Haram in Islam, it means, her means, do you know what her means? Rama means like condemned. Condemned, yeah. So her means O. In Sanskrit it means O. So what he's actually saying means O Ram. So the holy name is so powerful that it will even act like that. Haridas Thakur, he gives this example. If one is being killed by a boar and he chants haram, haram, and the holy name will act. Also we see example of Ajamil. He had a son named Narayan, and then he fell down from devotional service. And then towards the end of his life, he called out for Narayan, his son. His intention was to call out for his son. But because his chanting was offenseless, the Vishnudutas came and they saved him from the Yamadutas. And eventually he went back to Godhead. So we also see that's why Prabhupada emphasized chanting of Hare Krishna so much. Especially the congregational chanting or the chanting of the Harinams. And also, and then Mahaprabhu asked him, how will all the moving and non-moving entities be delivered? And Haridas Thakur again said, simply by the loud chanting of your holy names, all the moving living entities will also dance in ecstasy. And we see that sometimes when we go on Harinam, suddenly people start dancing, you know, because it's the effect of the holy name. And generally, we can't give somebody a bead bag and ask them to, you know, chant on the street. Ask them to sit down and try one round of Maha Mantra. And you'll become so peaceful and happy. But the process for this age is the congregational chanting of the holy name of Krishna. And generally, when on Harinam, Krishna's names are chanted, people dance in ecstasy, spontaneously. And they get purified. By this chanting, their sinful reactions are destroyed. And Krishna says, when one is free from sinful reactions in his previous lives and in this life, then one can take up the process of devotional service. So, by giving them the Hari Nam or the holy name, people get purified, and then they gradually take up to this process of Krishna consciousness. And it especially depends on the potency of the chanter. Or the group of devotees chanting. And like another, and even then he asked him, how will non-moving living entities be delivered? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so much concerned about the living entities. And Haridas Thakur said, again he said the same thing, when the loud chanting takes place, the plants and insects, for them it is like an echo. You know, they can hear the Maha Mantra, and they also gradually become delivered. So this Krishna consciousness movement is the best welfare activity for the whole of society. It's the supreme welfare activity, especially the chanting of Hare Krishna. And it should be encouraged as much as possible. And it is the best advertisement. You know, sometimes people say, where have you Hare Krishna's been? You know, You know, because people like it. And sometimes they tell us, where have you been? Because they see us after so many years. So if this chanting is spread more and more, people will become, the world will become more and more favorable to this process of Krishna consciousness. Initially they are inimical. You know, I think Prabhupada says, first they'll, what's the saying? First they'll hate us. Somebody told me. Then, first is they'll hate us. And the last one was then they'll love us. I can't remember what Prabhupada said. So, first people hate us. You know, then they think, ah, they're not bad. Then gradually they start liking us. Sorry?
First
laugh at us, then they'll hate us. First they laugh at us because they think, oh, what is this, you know. They're dressed up in robes, shaved heads. What is the song they're singing, you know. It's because it's totally different to the trend. First they'll laugh at us. Then they'll hate us because the Hare Krishna movement... Sorry. So first they laugh at us because, you know, they laugh at us, what are we doing, you know? You know, we're so different to everyone. Then they'll hate us because gradually they'll see that actually this Hare Krishna movement is against the four pillars of sinful life. You know, is against their economy basically. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Then they'll hate us for this. But gradually they'll see that that actually the devotees have substance in their lives. They have meaning, and they are very happy, and then they love us gradually. And you can see that even now to different degrees. Sorry? They love prasadam, yes. So, and also we see, what was the point we were saying? That,
love and hate.
Before that, I forgot. Yes, thank you. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking Haridas Thakur, how will they be delivered? So it is by this chanting. And also we see in the glories of Srila Haridas Thakur and how he delivered this prostitute. There was, when Haridas Thakur, he went to Benapol to do, and in Benapol forest, he created a cottage and he planted a tulsi tree in front. And he was chanting Krishna's names 300,000 times daily. Just imagine that. And everybody, by the power of his, by his spiritual potency, so many people were attracted to him, and they were actually worshipping him, Haridas Thakur. And they were bringing him his food and everything. And there was this person, Ramachandra Khan. He got very envious of him. How come so everybody is worshipping him? So he said, I'll make this devotee fall down. So, and because he was an atheist, so he hired some prostitutes and he selected the best of them. And she said, give me 3 days and I'll break him. So she dressed very attractively and she went to Haridas Thakur. And when she went there, she asked him, she said, I want to unite with you. You're very attractive. And Haridas Thakur said, yes, sure, I will fulfill all your desires. But first I have to do all my rounds. I have to chant all my rounds. After that, I will fulfill all your desires. So he said, you just sit down here and you hear the chanting and then I'll fulfill your desires. So she offered her obeisances to the Tulsi plant. She offered her obeisances to Haridas Thakur and she sat down. So the whole night he kept chanting. And then morning time came. And morning time came, he said, and then she was going away. He said, tomorrow definitely, I will fulfill all your desires. You come tomorrow. Again she came. And same thing happened. He said, I haven't finished my rounds yet. Let me finish all my rounds first. So he kept chanting 300,000 rounds till morning. Again she was getting very restless. He said, what can I do? I've taken this vow. I have to complete all my rounds. So he finished his round. He said, I haven't finished my round, so come tomorrow again. And actually, on the second night, she chanted, O my Lord Hari, O my Lord Hari, in imitation, so that he might think she's getting purified. And because she was sincere and simple, and on the third night again she came. And same thing happened. But by the end of the night, she started chanting Hare Krishna. So we see actually how Haridas Thakur, he actually wasn't interested in fulfilling her desires, but he was interested in preaching to her by this chanting of Hare Krishna. So that doesn't mean we have to imitate Haridas Thakur and we have to put ourselves in a situation like that in order to preach. But the point is, by the chanting of Hare Krishna, you know, this is the purification for the people in general. And you know, this is done by distribution of Prabhupada's books, distribution of prasadam, and especially by promoting chanting of Hare Krishna throughout the world, throughout the streets. And we see how she got purified. And then Haridas Thakur told her, and she accepted Haridas Thakur as her spiritual master. And she asked him, you know, what should I do? I've accumulated unlimited sinful acts because she was a prostitute. So what do I do to counteract them and become purified? So Haridas Thakur, he told her that you distribute all your wealth and property to the Brahmanas. So by this, Haridas Thakur shows how charity should be performed. In this day and age, especially, you know, we see, like, you know, people do charity by feeding people meat, or you know, giving alcohol, or giving charity to an unqualified person who commits more sinful activities. So charity should be given to Brahmanas. That's what Haridas Thakur showed, and she did that, and then he asked her to come to reside in that hut forever and chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and get purified. And we see that. And also we see how one has to be very when we take up this process of Krishna consciousness, we have to be very careful of all kinds of devious philosophies and bogus philosophies. And we see in the Chaitanya Lila, for example, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was in Jagannath Puri, there was a very dear devotee of him, whose name was Bhagavan Acharya. His rasa with him was in friendship. And he had a brother named Gopal Bhattacharya, who had gone to Benares to study Vedanta, and he had come back. And so he told Shivananda Sen that let's go to my brother Gopal Bhattacharya and hear from him the Vedanta philosophy. And actually, first he took him to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him because he was his devotee's brother, but actually he wasn't very pleased with him. So we should be very careful of when we become devotees, who we associate with. And we should always keep the core of our association with devotees. And we should give our association to non-devotees to show them compassion. But those who are very envious of Krishna, or those who are inimical, we should avoid their association. Especially in this case, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shivananda Sen, he exemplified that one should stay away from Mayavadis, or those who have this mentality. Because, and then he asked Shiva, I think it was Shivananda Sen, he asked him that let's go and hear from my brother, Gopal Bhattacharya. And he said, what's wrong with you? You know, you want to hear from a Mayavadi. And he chastised him. But Bhagavan Acharya said, no, let's go and hear from him. Because he said, we are already fixed up, you know, we won't fall down. And then actually, then Shivananda Sen, he told him that no matter how advanced one is in Krishna consciousness, if he hears Mayavad's philosophy, especially Vedanta Sutra and the Sharirika Bhasya, the commentary of Shankaracharya, one will fall down. Because the Mayavad philosophy is a jugglery of words. And it basically says that the jiva is imaginary, and that God is simply the Brahman effulgence. And then when God comes to this world, he assumes a form. He comes from from formless, he accepts a form, and that form is covered by Maya, or it is made up of matter. So this is a very dangerous philosophy. And that the living entity, he is originally God, but because he comes under the influence of Maya, he becomes a living entity. And when he overcomes this influence, he again merges into the effulgence. So this is a very dangerous philosophy. And that's why it is said one should not read too many books. And Prabhupada said one should read only my books. So we see this in this pastime. So it's almost 9 o'clock. We'll just stop here and see if there are any comments or questions on the subject matter. Yes, Prabhu.
You said that Haridas Thakur and the prostitute that you said the first day and night she started chanting.
Second. She was imitating him. She was saying, "Oh my Lord Hari, Oh my Lord Hari." That was an imitation. But the third night she seriously chanted. She started chanting Hare Krishna towards the end of the third night. So by the influence of a pure devotee, she got transformed. And that is the whole principle of this Krishna consciousness movement. All these different preaching strategies, they are simply to give people, devotees, association. So that when they come in association of devotees, they get purified. And then they gradually come to Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhuji. So many?
Bosses. And we depend on so many other things in our life outside of Krishna. We depend on our job, we depend upon our permanent residency, we depend upon our we depend upon our bank balance, so many things we depend upon. And this verse very clearly points out the aspect of surrender. The Lord sees us that our dependence is somewhere after becoming devotee. If He sees us that our dependence is reducing on Him, and by chance there is a small deviation somewhere, then immediately He gives us a slap across our face, and then He tries to bring us back on track. Saying that depend on Me alone, don't depend on so many other things. And that is the advantage and disadvantage of Krishna consciousness. That's it.
So yeah, if Krishna sees we are deviating, He makes arrangements to bring us back, and He can do that. Krishna does that to one actually who can handle it. He doesn't do it to every devotee. He doesn't deprive every devotee of his wealth or family. One who can handle it. For some devotees, like with Prabhupada, we see first he took away everything, and then he gave him so much. Prabhupada could handle that. He gave him unlimited success. But Prabhupada was fixed in his Krishna consciousness. His mission was to serve his spiritual master in all circumstances. So if Prabhupada gives, if we can handle it. Krishna gives.
I met one person and he was telling me that how come in ISKCON only all rich people are coming here? He was mostly if you see all around the world, people are pretty opulent and more connected with the devotees and pretty opulent, at least at this time.
One of Prabhupada's strategies was also preach to intelligent people because they can have more effect on the world. And Prabhupada would especially spend a lot of time with leaders and prominent people. He would give them priority because if they preach, then their effect will be a lot. For example, George Harrison, he made so many people devotees. But in some parts of where ISKCON is doing preaching, like Bangladesh, over there not everybody is also rich. So I have a mix. Especially, it is more emphasis is given to preach this to educated people. They can do more. Even I think in one of the lectures I was hearing, Prabhupada was getting criticized for this point. One of Hindi lectures of Prabhupada. There were news reporters. They were asking him questions. He said, "Your temple is so opulent, and we only see rich people are coming in. You know, poor people are not coming in your doors. You know, why is this?" And Prabhupada said, "Our doors are open for everyone. You know, if they don't come, what can we do?" But Prabhupada was saying, "They are also poor. You know, doesn't mean one is rich because simply one has the wealth. They are poor because they don't have Krishna." he was making that point to them. Actually, a rich man is even more diseased because he's infatuated with material opulence and all that. But if preached to them, they can have more effect because he can use their wealth and influence to spread Krishna consciousness.
Prabhupada's strategy was very nice in the sense that Prabhupada knew that if the wealthy people take to Krishna consciousness, then the people who are not so wealthy will know that wealth does not give eternal happiness. Otherwise,
that's right.
Even the wealthy see something.
Exactly. Yeah. Because generally people think, only in India at least, people think, you know, this process is for poor people. Only poor people take to God because they are deprived of wealth, you know. So, but if a rich person is taking, then his wealth is not making him happy. That's why he's taking.
Prabhuji, a Krishna conscious person, suppose he is a student, trying so much to get a good job, but his every attempt gets frustrated, nothing happens, then in that situation, how should we relate that with Krishna's benediction or mercy or what type of? How should we relate it? He makes so many attempts, nothing happens.
We should see what the focus of that student is. If his I mean, you should still keep trying, but you know, we should see what the motivation is of that student. Is his motivation to simply make money or to fulfill the order of Prabhupada? If he's striving for that and he's getting frustrated, then you can take that it's coming from Krishna. But if the motivation is something else and we're getting frustrated, then that is not directly coming from Krishna. Like in Prabhupada's case, we see, you know, Prabhupada's spiritual master, he told him, if you get money, print books and distribute them. So that was his life and soul. And his business was falling apart here and there. His family was not interested, you know. But, you know, Prabhupada's aim was to preach and to give this to others. So we should see in ourselves what our true motivation is. Yes, Prabhuji.
First of all, we would like to thank you for such a nice class.
And thank Prabhupada.
Because Prabhupada was so fixed in his duty, service, Vision Master. Like in Chairman Shop, he was going on Viksha. Even the publisher of the company, as Chairman Company, he said to Swamiji, "Why you are taking so much trouble?
Yes.
You can relax and do your chanting." But he probably said, "No, this is my mission." And he was writing and he was editing and printing and going on Riksha and taking those deliveries and distributing to people. And he said, because Prabhupada knew that we are spiritual. We can never be happy with any material assets. So that was his aim.
Yes.
He did it and he showed to everyone.
Yes. Thank you.
And as you said, Krishna consciousness is a matter of sincerity. How sincere we are in our efforts. And if we are sincere in Krishna, we will definitely be successful. And we all can go back to that.
Yes. Thank you. You had a question, Prabhuji?
You said something about that Prabhupada was teaching to educated people. Educated in which sense? Educated.
Educated means in the mundane sense.
Relative word.
In the mundane sense. Yeah, not spiritually. Spiritually, they're not educated. That's why he's educating them. That's why his real education is, their real education is beginning. They're not spiritually educated.
You mean academic, more degrees? Academic.
Yeah, more degrees and more people who had more influence, you know.
More money.
Like Prabhupada stressed a lot on college preaching, distributing these books to the especially to students and to the intelligent people, to influential people. Prabhupada stressed that. We see in like in India, some ISKCON temples are doing very well. Like they approach many big companies, and you know they there's that corporate sankirtan going. So there's you know preaching in many places in the world. They're doing programs in universities.
And we see so many situations also, like Prabhupada, preached to George Harrison.
George Harrison, yeah.
Because of that, you know, many people become devotees.
Yeah.
The Irish one is there, Alfred Ford.
Yes, yes.
Because of him, people are becoming devotees. And then in Juhu, when I went last, I think 2-3 years back to Juhu temple, it was a very different kind of a temple. It was so opulent. When we went to Govindas for prasadam, then outside the photograph of one of the Bollywood film stars, greatest film stars, he was there, and then one heroine of Bollywood, her photograph was there, saying that they are also coming here and eating. And that's the way, and when people know that such people are coming and eating, then they automatically are encouraged to come and have prasadam. So I think Prabhupada is a brilliant strategist.
Yes.
He knew exactly how to rope in the people with different mindsets.
First he went to the west to attract the Indians. And then the Indians are seeing, oh, Westerners are also doing, we should also do. And then you got the prominent Indians. Then the rest will follow. Prabhupada all figured out. Prabhupada said, I have one big problem. I always think big. I never think small. That's my problem, Prabhupada said. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila
Prabhupada. Yes.